surprised and the rules of the world.
Guided by a master plan for complete domination of the Earth.
I hope you will like it.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Paranormal Hotline, the weekly paranormal podcast where we talk about monsters, creatures, ghouls, UFOs, and Britney Spears. My name's Kaylee, and I'm joined by my co-host, Oisin.
Howdy.
So it's been a rainy and miserable week here in Ireland for the weather. When it gets like that, there's usually only one thing that's on my mind. Shipwrecks. Because there are so many shipwrecks along the Irish coast, and there's always something kind of spooky about those stories. I love hearing stories about shipwrecks. I know it's awful. But shipwrecks usually tend to happen due to bad weather or like malfunctions or something. Some of them are even caused on purpose by like pirates and stuff. But I have an interesting tale of a shipwreck that claimed the lives of four men after the ship had already been sunk. But the question is, what caused this shipwreck in the first place? And of course, if you guys are enjoying this creepy story, you can consider following us wherever you listen to the podcast, on Spotify or wherever it is that you listen to it. You can also follow us on Twitter at ParanormalHL. If you have the time, please consider leaving us a review wherever you listen to the podcast. It really helps us out and it helps other people find the podcast too.
Or else I'll wreck your ship.
So our story begins on March 24th, 1962, with a man named Edward Brian McCleary. And he just goes by Brian normally, not Edward. And he's aged 16 and he was invited on a skin diving trip by his friend Eric Reul, also aged 16. So skin diving, it just means diving without the use of a respirator. So it's just like free diving, but free diving is actually a competitive sport. So you don't really say free diving when you say skin diving.
So it's like diving, just like, no scuba.
Yeah, exactly. It's just recreational diving, basically.
Cool.
But Brian says that he checked the weather report before agreeing to this trip. And it looked like the weather was going to be clear all day. So they were joined by Brad Riceford, who was 14, Warren Felly, who was 16 as well, and Larry Stewart, Billy, who was 17. So these... They're all quite young, to be honest with you. There's five of them in total, and they're all
young,
like...
Young crew.
Yeah, teenage guys. 14 is the youngest, 17 is the oldest. And their plan was to dive out near the wreckage ship USS Massachusetts. And in truth, the ship had actually been sunk because they were testing experimental artillery on it. And it was kind of like an older ship anyway, so they just tested artillery on it. Yeah.
And a decommissioned battleship or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
If that's what you want to believe, that's the government's story, man. So they drove to Fort Pickens State Park, where they entered the waters of Pensacola Bay, heading for the sunken USS Massachusetts, which is located on a sandbar about 2 miles off the shore. They didn't really have a boat. Like, you'd think, like, 2 miles is no small distance. It's pretty far away, especially from shore.
Yeah.
You know, they must have had a decent boat, but all they had was a 7-foot Air Force life raft, right? So, you know, like, they just had one of those orange rafts. You know, the ones you're picturing when you think of an emergency life raft.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say at least like a civilian speedboat or something.
No, that would have been way better, man. That would have been way better. This thing didn't even have like an engine or anything. It was just, they were paddling it. It was awful. No. Like, I know it was like 62, but I mean, like, I feel like it wouldn't be that hard to get a boat. I don't know. They were teenagers anyway. This is what they were doing for fun.
This is already set up to be particularly tragic.
Yes, it's pretty tragic. So it's only like a 7-foot life raft. So there's five dudes in this thing. Like, it's small. It's already risky business from the get-go. So the raft had like a drift anchor, pockets for provisions and oars. And that's pretty much what they had with them. So Brian actually did an interview in Fate magazine in May of 1965. So the majority of this comes from his account in that magazine. And he really stressed just how cold the water was when they first entered it. It was freezing cold. Again, which is just insane considering this was 2 miles out. I just feel like these guys weren't thinking.
No.
Were things really that much more lenient in like the 60s? If I told my mother I was going out on a raft with my friends 2 miles out to dive at a shipwreck, she'd kill me.
If I said that, I'd want to not come back.
Yeah, exactly. But the boys, they set out anyway. They were going to go out and do this. This is what they were doing for the day. They took turns paddling, so no one would be tired when they got to the place to actually start diving. But on the trip out, a storm started to whip up. So, like, almost immediately, it's only 2 miles. It wouldn't be that far of a raft, like, of a, you know, paddle out. But, like, almost immediately, basically, a storm started to whip up, which wasn't forecast. And the sea started growing choppier and choppier. The clouds started to roll into the sky. and the waves, they started to push the raft kind of further out to sea than what these guys were expecting. They weren't getting pushed out to sea, but they weren't in control of the raft anymore, basically. So three of the boys jumped out of the raft and tried to push it. Like, they were basically paddling, they were holding onto the side and trying to kick their legs and move it, but it was just not working. The current was just too strong, so they ended up giving up and jumping back into the raft. And the waves were so high that they now had to hold onto the sides of the raft or else they'd get thrown out of the raft. So the weather was just getting worse and worse for these poor kids. So the sky started growing darker and other boats they saw out at sea began to head for shore. And they saw a boat entering the channel and they waved at the boat. You know, they were crying for help and shouting Mayday. And an older woman, like an elderly woman, waved back at them from this boat but didn't come to help them at all. They were like screaming Mayday and waving at her. She was like, oh, look, I just waved back at them.
I presume it's a bigger boat, like, it's not another raft.
Yeah, it's a bigger boat. It's not a raft. Like, they passed another raft with an elderly woman in it.
It's a hefty enough boat.
She did not assist. But Brad, one of the kids, grabbed the shark gun. I find it very strange that they had a shark gun of all things. Like, they were prepared for sharks, but they were not prepared for bad weather. But he grabbed the shark gun anyway, and he tied his red shirt to the tip of it. And he unhooked the link from it and he fired it directly at the boat that had passed them, just in case they didn't know it was a Mayday. And the raft almost overturned as well from the kickback. So the spear hurled through the air and landed about 50 feet short of the boat. Like, it was impossible not to see this. Like, anybody could see this was a distress signal. But the boat just kept its course and didn't attempt to rescue the boys at all. So they were just completely shocked. This boat just ignored them, basically. And they just continued to drift out to sea. It's so weird that the old lady just waved at them. I mean, they were in a raft too. Like, if I saw a raft, I'd assume a boat sunk or something.
Because, especially if it's one of those orange ones.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was a safety raft. It was an aircraft raft that they had. I don't know where they got it from, but they had one. And she didn't think twice. It's just so weird. So shortly after this, they came across a boy. And the water was really, really bad at this stage. So they're basically in the middle of a storm.
A boy and, or a boy?
A boy. A boy. How do I pronounce that word? It's just boy.
Boy. Boy.
It's just boy.
Boy. Yeah, boy. I know the one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, the it's like, yeah, one. Boy. But it's not, yeah, boy. It's really, really sad, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, so they saw this boy in the distance and they started making their way towards it. And they were going to go towards it and try to tie their raft to it. Yeah, I'm going to read Brian's account of the boy because it's actually wonderfully written. So I'm going to go ahead and read that.
This is from the magazine, is it?
This is from a book, actually. He wrote in the magazine, but he also wrote in a book, a whole chapter about it, too. A massive edifice of steel loomed above us like an angry giant. Its worn, chipped red paint contrasted with the black sky. It was covered with seaweed from top to bottom. As the waves lifted it from its mooring, a great riptide was formed at the bottom. The water foamed, gurgled, and was sucked underneath the metal monster. All 20 feet of it looked down on us. I stood up and hurled the anchor at the boy like a lasso. But before the line had a chance to reach the boy, the raft was caught in the undertone and dragged right from the bottom of the boy. It was like going downhill on a roller coaster. So they all jumped out of the raft and it got spit out somewhere on the other side of the boy. And they managed to get out of the water, out of the raft, and managed to hop back into it too. So from then on, they just kind of drifted in the raft. Absolutely miserable. This is like, they're just stuck. They've tried everything pretty much at this stage. And they actually ended up drifting past the ship that they had intended to dive at. I assume it was like semi-submerged because some of the ship was sticking out the top. Yeah.
That's terrifying. Like, have you ever heard of submechanophobia?
No.
So it's like the fear of like man-made objects that are partially or fully submerged in water.
That's weird.
But like big things out in the water like that boy, that's just like nightmare fuel for me sometimes.
That's very specific.
I know.
It kind of does remind me of the scene from Iron Giant, you know, when the ship crashes into him at the start of it during the storm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they think it's a lighthouse because his eyes are like shining. But so the rain began to subside and it turned into a thick fog. Visibility was limited to 25 feet and not a bit of wind at all. So there was just really, really thick fog that kind of came out of nowhere, really. So upon being stuck in the fog, the lads found a pack of cigarettes on the raft that somehow hadn't gotten wet. So they managed to stow away a pack of cigarettes and a lighter. And they all just sat around having a smoke. and they were just like having the chats, like they were sure they were gonna die before this, but I think once they found the cigarettes, they kind of calmed down a bit.
It takes the edge like, off.
The oldest one of these group is 17. Like, this has to have been the 60s. But Brad even mentioned at this point that he had a date later that night, so he was hoping to get back before then.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's really sad. And I realize now that up until this point, this story has not been paranormal at all yet. Just really, really tragic. So this is where the story kind of takes a paranormal turn. And I'm going to cut back to Brian's take on the story again. So this is his writing. The water was unusually warm beneath us. Warm even for a summer. And this was in March. Larry bolted upright saying, "Shh, I hear a boat or something." We all listened for the... We all listened for the noise he heard. The misty air became filled with the odor of dead fish. My stomach heaved and I gasped for breath. Just then, about 40 feet away, we heard a tremendous splash. The waves reached the raft and broke over the sides. So the waves kind of like crashed against it and broke when they hit the raft. Again, we heard the splash, and now, through the fog, we could make out what looked like a telephone pole. It was about 10 feet high with a bulb on the top. It stood erect for a moment and then bent in the middle and dove under. The sickening odor filled the air. So they speculated that it might have been an oarfish. They kind of talk amongst themselves in his writing that it might have been an oarfish, but oarfish can't really stand out of the water like that. What do you think of that?
That is very peculiar. When you say there is like a light...
It was, they described it as a bulb on the top, kind of like bulbous, okay. You know, it's not lit up.
I know there has been like historical accounts of like, you know, mermaids and stuff, but they've just been people mistaking like whale penises for things.
Yeah, I have heard that one, but I don't think whale penises have like a bulb on the top. I think that's more the, you know, like giant tentacles and stuff.
Yeah, it's a kraken. It's yeah, like whale dick.
Yeah, that's so disgusting. A sickening odor filled the air.
Oh, stop now, stop now.
Well, they did. He did say it stood erect.
Oh.
But, like, I can just imagine, like, because they saw this coming out of the fog. Could you imagine just seeing that, like, in the distance, just from the top of the fog, and then just bending and splashing into the water?
That's it. Like, you know, I'd be ready to... I'd be making my peace.
I'd be lighting another cigarette, man.
One more for the road.
Yeah. So we go back to his account here. So, the silence was broken once again by something out in the fog. I can only describe it as a high-pitched whine. We panicked. All five of us put on our fins and dove into the water. Patches of brown, crusty slime lay over the surface. God damn it, Usheen, all I can fucking think of now is the penis. That is that is so disgusting.
I'm sure you can get pills for that.
I began to swim and kick spasmodically. I've never heard that word before, spasmodically. I felt a small current under the surface and I hoped it would carry me in the direction of shore. In back of us, we could hear whatever it was splashing and making that hissing sound. The fog was clearing some and the water was becoming a bit rougher. Darkness was closing in, the rain began once more and the water was losing its warmth. I don't know how long it was before we heard a scream. It lasted maybe half a minute and then I heard Warren call, "Hey, help me, it's got Brad, it's got Brad. I've got to get out of here." This voice was cut off abruptly by a short cry. So at the end of his sentence, he kind of like let out a scream and then it was cut off.
Mm.
Warren and Brad were nowhere in sight. So Brian described for a while how tough the swimming was. So he goes on for a description for a while of how hard it was to keep swimming, which is fair. It's very difficult to swim long distance like that.
Yeah.
And how he wanted to give up many times and he just kept going, but they kind of lost sight of Larry as well. So Larry kind of disappeared off. And then he cuts back to him again. So both of us dove for him, tried to see if we couldn't see him on the surface, but there was no trace of him. After a while, we had to give up. Then Eric grimaced and sank. I swam over and wrapped his arms around my neck. "Cramps," he said. We swam like that for what must have been a couple of hours. Eric was becoming heavier with every minute, and I had no hope. Just as I was going under, the lightning flashed and I saw the silhouette of the Massachusetts. I began to take stronger strokes. "Come on, Eric, we'll be okay, boy. The ship's just over the next wave." I was close to the ship when a giant wave pulled me under and yanked Eric's arms from around my neck. I came up and couldn't see him anywhere. The lightning flashed and I saw him ahead of me. He was afloat and swimming for the ship. Right next to Eric, that telephone pole-like figure broke the water. I could see the long neck and two small eyes. The mouth opened and it bent down. It dove on top of Eric, pulling him under, and I screamed and began to swim past the ship. My insides were shaking uncontrollably. So he saw this telephone thing slam down basically on top of his friend who was heading towards the ship and pull him under.
That's creeping me out. You said that there was like eyes he described on it.
Yeah,
as well.
He saw two eyes on it this time. It's just creepy because like this whole thing is, you can see, he could see it all basically from the lightning that was happening around him, which makes it 10 times scarier.
His description is really interesting. It's very visual, and that's kind of, it's creeping me out, Kaylee.
Don't you live near the ocean?
Not gonna be able to sleep. I live right next to the ocean. Yeah.
It's gonna come on land. You're just gonna wake up, and there's gonna be a telephone pole over your bed.
I'll go out now with the axe and cut down the nearest one.
Somehow, after that encounter, Brian managed to actually swim another 2 miles to shore. So he swam 2 miles after Eric had been drowned, because the shipwreck was where he saw Eric being pulled under, and he swam another 2 miles to shore. And he said he's not sure how he pulled it off. He even says that he thought he sank to the bottom, and he remembers like the soft sand at the bottom of the ocean, thinking that he was going to die. But somehow he managed to make it back to the beach. And a group of lads found him there, and they realized that he was one of the missing divers. Like, this story is just insane. Like, I know it's horribly tragic either way, like whether it's actually paranormal or not. But damn, this would make a really cool movie. Like,
yeah,
I can picture it. Like, it would be really cool. So what I want to know is, if the monster took down the ship, and I mean the USS Massachusetts, the ship they were going out to dive at, like it was sunk by an arms test. You know, were they actually firing at the boat, or were they firing at something else? It's just weird that there's this sunken ship that's there. I've never heard of another ship being used for arm testing. Like, it's just really weird.
Now, it could be more cover-up, but I think they do regularly enough on decommissioned ships test, like, new artillery and such.
It's so strange. I've just never heard of it. But then for this thing to be so close to the boat, too, it's also only 2 miles from the shore. I feel like if they're going to do tests like that, they should do it a good bit out.
I'd definitely be testing a bit further out.
It's also just suspicious that woman on the other ship didn't do anything at all to save the boys. Like, she just waved at them. She was just like, all right, I'm not going over there.
That's really weird. That's particularly weird.
I wonder if they ever found out who she was. Like, I'm sure they could have, like, they probably knew the boat, which boat it was. I wonder if they ever found out who it was and why they didn't come and save them. Because they fired that gun at them too.
And that's not like a harpoon gun. That's like a, like one with elastic. That's like it takes a proper like shotgun cartridge, I'm pretty sure, to shoot those things.
Yeah, so I think it does.
It would have been loud.
Yeah.
Especially
it would have been loud,
and
it was close to the ship, and it was covered in a red t-shirt. There's no reason why they shouldn't have seen it. But yeah, the description of the monster that Brian gives, it kind of sounds like the plesiosaurus, you know, the dinosaur with the long neck and the body, and it basically looks like the image of the Loch Ness monster.
Yeah, I love them.
Yeah, they're great. They're so cool. All plesiosaurs became extinct as a result of the KT event at the end of the Cretaceous period, which was approximately 66 million years ago, which is, it just makes it very unlikely that there would be one. But there was a drawing in a cave in Australia from Aboriginals that looks insanely similar to a plesiosaur. So
I want to believe.
I want to believe it too. That'd be so cool. But the fact of it is, like, plesiosaurs, they breathe air like whales do, so they have to surface. Well, they would have had to surface. So the chances of us having seen one would be pretty damn high. And I did a bit of research on plesiosauruses? Is that even the word? I did a bit of reading on the plesiosaur. And apparently when scientists first discovered it, they put the head on the wrong end. They thought the neck was like its tail, like a really long tail to move it in the water. And they put the head on the wrong end of it. I just thought that was funny. They put the head on the arse, basically.
I know a few people like that, I think.
But yeah, I really wanted to believe in the plesiosaurus, but I feel like I'm pronouncing it worse every time that I pronounce it. I think the first pronunciation was great, and now I'm like the plebisaurus.
But yeah, diminishing returns on that one.
I looked up the chances of it still being alive, and even if one somehow did survive, apparently they wouldn't be able to lift their heads out of the water like that. Like, you know that swan pose that sea monsters' necks are often drawn in?
Yeah.
Apparently that just wouldn't be possible. They don't really bend that way, or they won't be able to support it. If you think about it, it makes sense that the body wouldn't be able to support that long fucking head sticking out of the water.
Yeah, they can only be so big because they're in the water.
Yeah, so
like whales.
I mean, it could be a giant snake, maybe. He only describes the long neck and head, but it wouldn't make sense that it's standing out of the water like that.
Snakes? Why did it gotta be snakes?
I don't like snakes.
Me neither. Well, no, I've met some nice snakes. But, like, as a general concept, snakes are like, meh.
Yeah, especially sea snakes, because they can come at you from underneath. I don't like that.
Snee snakes. Not snakes.
Snakey snakes. But yeah, there's a few other theories as to what Brian saw. And one of those theories is that they saw the scope of a submarine. I don't think those are actually that big, but it could explain like the shift in the water. Remember he said he felt like a current under the water when he was first swimming away from it? You'd probably know more about submarines than I would. How tall do the scopes get?
Well, a submarine would have to come quite close to the surface just to poke the little top of it out.
Yeah, that's true. But they were on a raft, they're pretty much on the surface. But I suppose they would have felt the current.
You definitely would have noticed this. It definitely would have affected the area.
Yeah.
A submarine coming to periscope depth. They definitely would have noticed, maybe not, if they don't notice the submarine, they would definitely notice the effects of it.
Yeah. It's a good theory, I suppose. If they thought they saw a lamppost or whatever, then submarine would make sense.
That, especially if it's more like a lamppost.
Yeah, but another theory that I've heard was that they actually encountered a giant bubble of methane gas being released. And
well, that
I was
would explain
actually,
the smell.
Yeah, I was familiar with this theory because it was one of the explanations that was given for why ships keep going missing in the Bermuda Triangle. So when the butane bubble would come up, the density in the water would drop and the ships would basically sink, even though there was nothing wrong with them. Yeah, Lake Kivu in Africa is another example of methane fog and explosions. If you look at videos of the methane bubbles, they stir up sediment and they, combined with the gas itself, they actually create a fog. So it would explain the smell, the fog. It would explain why the water was warmer too. Because he did say the water was warmer where the monster thingy was.
Yeah, it could be from the floor or the decay that caused the methane.
Well, most methane gases, I think, come from volcanic activity anyway, which would make sense for that area. Yeah, it explained the residue that was on the surface of the water too. But also the gases from methane can actually cause hallucinations. So if they were sitting in that fog long enough, what were they inhaling? Were they all having the same kind of hallucination? Or maybe they all had different hallucinations and Brian was the only one to survive?
It's the guy screaming for half a minute that gets me.
What do you mean?
He said, before, where is...
The screaming continued, yeah.
Yeah, screaming goes on for half a minute. That's really... You can't really scream and swim at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know, can you, though? Because I feel like if most people, when they're drowning, they kind of tend to bob up and down. So if he was screaming and then went under, come back up, start screaming again.
But you come up because there's air in your lungs. So if you're screaming, you're going to sink a lot faster.
I don't know enough about sinking and screaming. You sure you can't swim and scream at the same time? We should go test this out. I'll go throw you into the ocean.
We should. I can't really swim in the first place, so.
Perfect. That's perfect. So I'll throw you into the ocean and we'll just see how long you can scream for.
I will naturally scream. It's authentic.
It'll be really funny. I'll get a lamp post and everything and... But yeah, that's one of the other theories then, is that they kind of just hallucinated the creature. The last theory I have then is probably the saddest one, and that's just survivor's guilt. So Brian was the only one of his friends to survive, and he suffered with his mental health for years after this ordeal. He doesn't talk about it publicly at all anymore. Well, he does. He didn't. He died in, I think, 2016 or something like that. Sorry, 2014. But he suffered with his mental health, basically, because of this ordeal. He had, a mental breakdown. Sorry, if he was swimming and he could hear his friends struggling behind him, or heard them calling for help, it's probably easier for him to deal with it by saying that it was a sea monster. But it's probably easy for him to say, I couldn't go back because there was a sea monster, instead of saying I couldn't go back because I was selfish, you know?
Yeah, or even just to be not strong enough.
Yeah, but I do like to think that it was a proper sea monster. His descriptions of it are absolutely chilling, though. It's creepy. It's a scary story. So what do you think? Do you think sea monsters are real, or what do you think the cause might be?
Those are two different questions.
They could be the same.
We've explored and discovered more of outer space than we have of our oceans. No, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff we've yet to actually discover under the ocean, and the stuff that we do discover deeper and deeper down is insane.
Yeah.
Now, this wasn't deep down, but I do like the old Kraken, I do like sea monsters.
Yeah,
I want to believe. I think it could just be a freak accident, either. The methane is an interesting explanation.
Yeah.
And like as a whole, that kind of, I don't want to say way of writing it off, but that, what's the word?
I feel like methane is kind of used as like an umbrella answer for a lot of sea mysteries, though. Like,
yeah,
so many times, like,
a sea mystery.
A ship will go missing or it will just sink for no reason, or their whole crew will go missing, or something mysterious will happen in the ocean. And always the answer is, oh, it was probably a methane bubble. Like, not everything's a methane bubble. I think it's pretty rare as well. I don't think it happens that often. I think
it seems like something that the situation has to be just right for it to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely not the answer for the Bermuda Triangle. I think actually, statistically, shipwrecks happen just as likely anywhere else as they do in the Bermuda Triangle. People tend to just focus on that one little area.
I wouldn't be surprised. People love to find patterns.
Yeah. So methane gases, I don't know. I don't know for sure whether that's actually likely. Like, what's more likely, methane bubble or something alive in the ocean that we don't know about because we haven't explored it, you know?
Especially right there, you know, that, you know, they can go check for methane bubbles there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't know if they can actually, but I assume they can.
Maybe they'll get caught by a large sea monster.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it wasn't too far from the coast either as a thing, so if it was a sea monster...
Yeah, only 2 miles out.
Was it, like, lost? Or what the fuck? Like, I picture
maybe
sea monster, I picture,
the
like, the depths, you know, like the Mariana Trench or some shit.
Yeah, I really want it to be a plesiosaur.
I don't think it's likely to be a plesiosaur, but that's exactly
no.
what he described.
The thing that really gets me again, though, is the old woman on the boat.
Maybe it was a ghost boat or something.
Ghost ship? I was going to say ghost ship. Ghost
maybe
boat?
She's like, maybe she was killed by that monster before and she was
maybe
a little
ghost.
Maybe
her waving was a warning.
Yeah.
Or maybe like she wanted more people to be hanging around in that part of the afterlife.
What if when he shot the shark gun at it, that it didn't miss, that it went through it? But yeah, so you're thinking some kind of monster from the depths, right?
That's what I want to think.
But what do you actually think?
I think it could be a combination of... I don't want to say that they just all drowned and that it was like, you know, it was his coping mechanism. But I'd like to tie it in with maybe there was something like... I'm not saying whale penis, but I'm saying maybe a whale.
There is videos of a particular... I think it's like a basking whale or something similar to that. That is some kind of filter feeder anyway that looks really, really weird. I've seen it in a few responses to it. It doesn't look like a telephone pole. But if you didn't know what it was, you'd be like, that's a sea monster. The way it filter feeds on the surface like that.
Anything in the mist is going to be terrifying.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Especially in the ocean. A large creature can easily overturn a 7-foot raft.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it only makes sense to your imagination to run with that afterwards.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if you couple that with survivor's guilt too, you kind of... get a perfect concoction there. Yeah, moral of this episode is not to go diving with your friends on a raft without proper safety precautions. And if you do go diving, just get some lessons or something. Don't learn how to do it. Like, just do it safely, you know? Don't Google this shit. These guys didn't even have Google and look what happened.
Keep your ocean smokes dry.
Always double check the weather report and be prepared for unexpected turn in the weather. Like, these poor boys thought they were like... They thought they knew what they were doing, and sea monster or not, it was not going to end well for them, because even before the sea monster, they were struggling. Yeah, well, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode, and remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, you can support us by leaving us a review. I can't underestimate how much a review really helps us, and it only takes a couple of seconds to do it as well. So thanks, guys, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
See ya.